Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Autumn Semester 2015. Lecture 17, delivered on October 28, 2015. The title of this lecture is Measuring Expected Return and Volatility.
Today, Measuring Expected Return and Volatility of Returns. This is a more of a technical lecture. It's not all that hard. Just make sure that you don't make a mistake and key in something wrong when you're doing the calculations on it. Bear with me 1 minute here. I'm going to bring up a calculator. Any old scientific calculator will do for this. This is not really so much finance as this is math. And it's actually statistics. And you've probably seen it before, although I don't know that you've seen it being used in math or in finance. Here's the deal. First of all, first things first, is the expected, the average return. Now, again, we are playing in the world of historical data. And as such, you have to keep that in mind when you're working on this kind of data, that this doesn't tell you about the future, but it does tell you about past performance. Now, the average return, writing it in fancy notation, the average return would be the number of time intervals, 1 over the number of time intervals, times the sum from 1 to n of the returns in each of those intervals. That's a fancy way of saying add them up and divide by the number of data points you have. This assumes equal weight of the returns that you analyze. There are a couple of other ways that I've mentioned before, and I'll just bring them up. They're certainly not in this chapter, but you can do more of a weighted average or a moving average, where returns that are in more recent times would have greater weight than returns in earlier times. And that kind of weights it towards what's happening in the here and now more than in the distant past. But this is the one that the book uses, and for the quiz and exam, this is the one that you would use. In other words, just add up the returns and then divide by the number of data points that you had. That is the expected return to the portfolio. Now, the variance of those returns is a measure of volatility, the variance of the returns. Now, to do that one, you're going to take 1 over the number of data points minus 1, and then you are going to add up each of the individual data points minus the average return, and we'll mark that as R with a bar over the top of it. R of each data point minus the average squared. In other words, you're taking each one of the data points minus the expected place it should be, and then you square it, and that takes away so that negative and positives don't cancel each other out. This isn't as important as your standard deviation. Oh, and don't forget to take 1 over t minus 1 once you've done that. Now, more important to us is the standard deviation, which is the square root of the variance. The standard deviation is important because this gives us the ability to do what's called a prediction interval. A prediction interval. If the returns are distributed normally, in other words, they've got a nice bell curve below and above the average, they have essentially, if you had a very large number of data points, they would flow along a bell curve. where the center was the R with the R bar, the average. That standard deviation has a use to us. One of the popular places is that on a normal distribution, 95% of the time, the data will fall between R bar minus twice the standard deviation and R bar plus twice the standard deviation. 95% of the time. We call that a prediction interval, some do, in finance. And 95% is actually very popular. A couple of others that are popular, one is the 99% prediction interval, which is a wide interval. And then there's also the 90% prediction interval, which is a narrower, which is a much narrower. I'm sorry, 97.5 and 95. 95, 97.5, and 99 are the popular ones. The book and the quiz and the test focus on the 95% interval. So you find, first you find your average using the first formula. Add up the returns you got historically, divide by the number of returns that you used. And then you find the variance, and then you divide, and then take the square root of that. And that will give you the standard deviation. Then you can produce your prediction intervals. Now here's how I would do that. I threw some data down, hoping that it would be useful. Okay. Here we go. I'm gonna write down some numbers here. Returns. Suppose that I think this is over a 10-year period. Your returns have been negative 19.8%, 16.8%, 17.7%, negative 49.8%. Seriously? No, that's 49.5%. 43.1%, 1.4%, negative 16.8%. These are year over year. 45.8%, 45.3%, and finally, negative 3.5%. This is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, 10. This is 10 annual returns. 10 annual returns. Strongly recommend that you follow along and do this with me, especially since I'm going to do it once before and now I'm going to do it again. Make sure I can do it right. I'm going to just add those up and divide by 10. That's the first formula. That gets us our average return over those 10 years. And that would come out to be really 19.8%, negative, plus 16.8%, plus 17.7%, plus negative 49.5%, plus 43.1%, plus 1.4%, plus negative 16.8%, plus 45.8%, plus 45.3%, plus negative 3.5%. And so R bar, the average, R with a bar over the top of it, would be 1 over 10 times 80.5%. which gives us an 8.05% average return over the 10-year period. And again, for God's sake, do this with me. Now, the variance is a pain in the butt. In Excel, it actually goes faster. But be careful about using the Excel function, VAR, or VAR variance, because it might do it with 1 over T instead of 1 over T minus 1. So I don't know. You might want to test it on a small sample to see what happens. But cranking it through just one after the other after the other, all you're going to do is take, for example, just cranking it through here, clear, I'm just going to add up. I'm going to take negative 19.8 minus 8.05, and then I'm going to square that plus 16.8 minus 8.05 squared plus, open parentheses, 17.7 minus 8.05, .05, square that, plus, open the parentheses again, negative 49.5 minus 8.05, square that, plus, where the hell was I? What did I just do? So I got to do 43.1, open parentheses, 43.1 minus 8.05, close parentheses, square that one, plus, open the parentheses, 1.4 minus 8.05 quantity squared, plus, open parentheses, negative 16.8, boy, this is way too much like work, negative, minus 8.05, square that, plus, open parentheses, 45.8 minus 8.05, close the parentheses, quantity squared, plus, open parentheses, 45.3 minus 8.05, close the parentheses, quantity squared, plus, open the parentheses, negative 3.5 minus 8.05, close the parentheses, quantity squared equals. Now, I got 9,093.585. For the variance. Again, for the variance, and I might be wrong, I might have miskeyed something. If someone else was keying in, you might want to correct me on that. No guarantee that's the right one because I was holding a calculator trying to think and to chew gum at the same time. I got a variance of 9,093.585. Now, the variance in and of itself isn't too interesting to us. What we want is a standard deviation, sigma, which is the square root of that. There is no way that's right. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I screwed up something there. Because I have to divide that by 1 over 10 minus 1. Duh. I was going to say. So in other words, I have to take that number divided by 9. And there, that's better. Don't forget to do that last step. And I get 1010.3983. Now I can take the square root. Okay. That's still, that number is still large. I'm getting a standard deviation of 31.79%. I don't. But does it do 1 over t, or does it do 1 over t minus 1?
I think there's an option
on there for that. There is on this line. I know there is on the, yeah, I know there is on a TI-83, but my batteries were dead on that, okay? Don't judge me. Did anyone get another answer for this when you keyed these in? What did you get?
I got 1027.3.
For what?
Right there,
here, 1027. Still, that is a massively large number. We'll go with it. Again, there's no guarantee that this is right because I'm trying to do this. You got 1027 point what? 1020.73 repeating. 734. 3434 or... Oh, 4 repeating on it. Divide by 9? Okay. Okay, so now what I'll do is I'll take that one. 1020.73. Here, by the way, is where you don't want to round, if you possibly can't. Because once you take that square root, that's going to cause some serious rounding error if you've rounded too radically before you take the square root. That's just canon. That's law, a kind of thing. So I'm going to take the square root of this, and I get 31.9. Now here at sigma, I get 31.95. That seems like an awfully strong standard deviation. But, no, actually it doesn't. Here's what this means. Historically, you're over a 10-year period. This portfolio, or whatever it is that we invested in, earned us 8.05%, 8.05% on average per year. Also, what I know is that a 95% prediction interval going forward would tell me that between 8.05% minus 31.95% and 8.05% plus 31.95%, my portfolio return would land. That's a prediction interval. 95% of the time, my return should be between 8.05 minus 31.95, which is negative 23.90%, and 8.05 plus, times 2. I'm sorry, that's times 2. I'm trying to do too many things at once. Minus 2 times, and plus 2 times. So let me correct that. So between 8.05, seriously, minus 2 times 31.95, which is a negative 55 0.85% and 8.05 plus 2 times 31.95%. Jeez. 71.95%. That would be my 95% prediction interval. Now again, that standard deviation doesn't look right to me, but whether or not it is, just do it on Excel probably is better than doing it this way. Or, as you said, there's a way that you can key the data in TI-83s and get it done faster that way too. But the bottom line here is that you see that 95%, that's an awfully huge wide interval. So in a sense, there's not a lot that's being told to us by this. Commonly associated with higher beta stocks, they'll have higher variation in returns. They'll be swinging up and down a lot more over time, which tends to point us to the fact that prediction intervals won't do us a whole lot of good. Look at how massive that interval is there. I mean, who's going to tell? How can you tell anything from that? But if you look at the original data, look at how that thing swung over 10 years. There were times when it was down like 50%, then it was up almost 50%. It was all over the board. That's a highly volatile stock. So predicting its path in the future, 95%, what does it mean? 95% of the time, you're going to land between a negative 56% and a 72% return. Well, that doesn't do me a whole lot of good there. Again, though, that's just the nature of highly volatile stocks. You get stocks that are very tame, their year-over-year returns are similar, then those intervals are very tight. So in other words, what we're looking at is the difference between two distributions here. One is just a splatter and a low beta stock, a high beta stock would just be a splatter. Your 95% area is just wide. It's a massive thing. That would be this one right here. I mean, what can you say about it? But with a very tight, very, very little variation over the years, your 95% interval is going to be a lot more predictable. It's almost like a sure thing. You get down to betas of 0.4, 0.6, you're looking at those kinds of distributions. 95% of the time, your range is going to be very tight. You look at stocks that have high volatility, and they are just going to be all over the board from year to year, and then your spread, 95% of the time, you're between negative infinity and infinity almost. And that, of course, is part of the risk of those stocks, is that they are unpredictable. What happened last year and what happens this year can be very different things with those kinds of stocks. That is typically associated, by the way, with small cap stocks. It's typically associated with new companies, new starts, that might even be very big companies, but they're still new starts. Or with companies that are highly sensitive to the economic forces that are in the macro economy. All of those could lend to those wide distributions where predictability is not going to be all that great. In other words, they're higher risk stocks. Higher risk, higher expected return. You're not going to put money into something that is all over the board unless you expect to get candy out of it at the end of the day. Otherwise, why would you be doing that kind of 95% of the time I'm going to be in heaven or in hell? You're going to have to expect something really good out of a stock like that. Hence also the higher betas of those stocks. Now, let me bring up something here. How do I want to do this? I think I'm just going to throw something up here. I got to focus on what the book means by the difference between an arithmetic average and a geometric average. I showed you something that is more realistic for the real world, but I need to show you how the book describes an arithmetic average and a geometric average. Let's take a stock, and I'll just do three periods. Okay, return one, return two, return three. Say it's 12.5% return one, annual return one was 12.5%. Return two was 23.4%, and return three was 10.8%. Now, the arithmetic average is the no-brainer in this case. The arithmetic average is just going to be 1 over 3 times 12.5% plus 23.4% plus 10.8%. Just the average you've used since you were in high school or maybe even middle school. It's just the fast, dirty way to do it. Fast, dirty way to do it. Add those three up. 12.5% plus 23.4% plus 10.8%. And divide that by three. And the average, the arithmetic average return, comes out to be, rounded to two decimal places, 15.57%. Nothing big about that. Now let me do it another way. Now, in real finance, probably my way of doing that would be to take, to do it a slightly different way, but here's what the book's talking about by a geometric average. I am going to do it another way. I'm going to say 1 plus 0.125 times 1 plus 0.234 times 1 plus 0.108 minus 1. Do that. I want you to do it. So you can know that, so that would be 1.125 times 1.234 times 1.108 equals minus 1 divided by 3, and then I'm going to want you, in this case, take it times 1/3, assuming independent. You'll get 17.94%. That's a geometric average. Oh, I didn't write that. That's a geometric. There is another place where we use this, and I might show it to you by the end of the semester. This way down here at the bottom, a twist on it is how we can find what we call forward rates, annual forward rates. Because basically what I can do is I can say, all right, I know the yield on a one-year treasury bill. Now let me look at the total return on a two-year government instrument, and let me divide off that the 1 year yield. That would tell me directly the forward second year rate. Because what I do is, if I took a 2 year overall return and then lopped off what I know was the first year's, one plus, say, 0.04, I would actually have revealed to me the forward second year's yield. But that's down the road. I'll show that to you, and it'll make more sense once I do it. But this right here is like a geometric. And the book has its own variation. Every time you take a finance course, you'll see a slight variation on the geometric. But that's another way of looking at an average rate of return on an investment. It's just something to keep in the back of your mind. They have a couple on the quizzes and tests. Make sure you check the formula in the book to see how they're doing the actual exact formula. But that's one of the variations on it. They're all pretty much similar in that regard. Last thing, though, here. The last thing about all of this. Let me do something. I'm going to pull up. This all is numbers. And the numbers really, as I've told you over and over again, the numbers really don't mean a whole lot to me. Unless you can tell me, well, what does this do us in real life, in the real world out there? Okay. I want to pull up. Some numbers here. Now, let me do something here. I'm going to pull up. Oh, I don't know. Company. Yahoo Finance. Now, a company that was just in the paper, is in the news, a certain retail company that sells primarily pharmaceuticals and convenience goods of that kind, has shown up in the news because it's about to acquire another company that does the same thing. What is it? And what are they acquiring? Rite Aid. Okay, now, in your judgment, is that a good idea or a bad idea? Why?
Because Walgreens already has like market share in the pharmaceutical and kind of wellness, so I feel like if they acquire Rite Aid, they already are established.
And who is their competitor? Who was the primary competitor of Walgreens and, yeah?
CVS,
of course, obviously. There is a Walgreens and there is a CVS, literally, I swear, on every corner in this country. And the interesting thing about them is that if you're going for cheap, do you go to Walgreens, CVS, or Rite Aid? No. Where do you go? Walmart. Of course you do. I mean, CVS is expensive. Walgreens is expensive. Rite Aid is expensive. They're expensive for one specific reason. It's convenience. You can go right there at any time, day or night, and you suddenly realize, oh my God, my interview is in the morning. I've got to go to CVS and get myself one of those marijuana test kits.
Shit.
I know, right? It's you're screwed anyway, but you know, or something like that. Or you wake up after you have been to Earl's House of Tacos, and things are not going well. That country song, And the Thunder Rolls. By the time you get there, the lightning strikes. Now, what you going to do when the thunder rolls? You're going to go to get something at Walgreens. That's the primary reason for the prices. However, something else happens if you learned anything at all in your economics class, microeconomics. As market consolidation occurs, Market power increases. Now, what is one of the consequences as the number of competitors goes down and market power increases? We get closer and closer to what is called a monopoly. What is one of the very strong characteristics of monopolized industries? Does anyone remember? Yeah.
High barriers to entry,
absolutely. They're going to make it harder to get in, which is price. First, by acquiring space on every corner, where is another competitor going to move in? Price. One of the strong characteristics of monopolies is that they no longer price where supply and demand come together. They price where the marginal cost curve meets the demand curve, which means lower output at a higher price. So, that should be good news. So, let's have a look at Walgreens. Oh, wait. Did I want that? Why the moo? No, that's not what I want. Let's try that again. Walgreens. Seriously? I should have known that would not work out very well. Okay. Let's try this. Rite Aid. Let's look at the Rite Aid. I should have known that was a mistake. Rite Aid. Okay, so here we have Rite Aid. Right off the top, you know enough now, I've taught you enough about this, that you can be an absolute aminal when it comes to this kind of stuff. Talk to me. What do you see? Yes, you do. Oh, don't play that on me. What do you see for the beta? Yes. That is a... Yeah, go. Talk. Yes, this one's serious. A beta of 2 is up there. That's heavy duty, risky. What else do you see about this? Is there anything else you're seeing about this? Go. Very tight. In other words, there's not much. It's just happening very fast in this one. Very fast. That's a very good point. Look at that volume on that son of a bitch. That's a serious volume on that. Something interesting. The announcement was that Walgreens was about to acquire Rite Aid. That should be a good buy signal for Rite Aid. What do you see on the close versus the open on Rite Aid? Then the open. It closed at 8:67, it opened this last night, it opened this morning at 8:03. So what would you, in your judgment, think that says the market's doing? About this stock, about Rite Aid. Last night, you were awesome. I mean, you were an animal. We danced the night away. At one point, you started breakdancing, and I thought, you know, this is awesome. And so I gave you a 5-star rating on dancewithme.com. But then I go in this morning, and he gave me an 8.67 last night, but now it's an 8.03. What does that tell you? Someone hacked the site? No. What does it tell you? Go ahead. What does it tell you?
Losing value.
Losing value. But what does that mean? The market's setting this value. There's selling pressure. But last night, you were an animal. This morning.
Was it dancing?
Yeah. Well, there was also that eating contest that we did too. Okay. Now, what is going on here? Why do you see this happening? What's the market telling us? Well, there seems to be some indication that this is a highly risky stock. So anything that spooks a normal stock would spook this stock more. That's a good starter right there. In other words, I've got all these cats. I got these two older Manx cats. You'll just walk along and, you know, you try to say psst to them and they'll just meh like that. But my cat Phineas, he's walking along and you just barely move and he's up in the air twisting and doing really cool barrel rolls. Spooky. This dog is spooky. And something spooked it. Or something else happened overnight. You're thinking about stocks. You say, well, somehow a buy of this Rite Aid by Walgreens, whoa, let the good times roll. Drive the stock price up. Happy days. Let's look at the 5-day. Let's see what the 5-day is showing us on this. I'm going to pull this one up. This is a 1-day. No, I don't want to do that. I want to pull something else up here. Let me. Oh, 5-day. There we go. No, let's look at a 1-month. What do you see? What do you see? Yeah. And that did what? Yes. Well, once it's, it hasn't been bought.
So then right before it might get bought, people are dropping it to save themselves.
That would be a selling out. Some people were just speculating, grabbed it, and then they dumped as fast as they bought. But it could also be, now there was an old saying my grandmother told me years ago about marriage. First year's honey, second year's pie, third year, you son of a bitch, you can work as well as I. The honeymoon was there on the spike, okay? And then you wake up the next morning and you find out that you married Godzilla. Okay? Last night, it was 8:67. This morning, it's, oh my God, what did I just do? I married a very, very evil thing. I mean, it doesn't, it has like, it's breath. That's, anyway. So you see what's happening here? That is what we call correction. Part of it, and it's obviously sell-off. Some of the heady investors who thought, oh, this is the greatest thing, overnight they realized, dear God, this is not what I thought it was. And so it's what you're seeing is a market, is a correction there. Is it serious? Well, the stock is still up over what it was. But let's look at something that would be a 2-year. You notice that Rite Aid has gone through ups and downs over the 2 years, okay? So, if I were to start here, I've got, let's say, the close at 53.33. That would have been 2 years ago. $5.33. So, 2 years ago. So this morning, it is $8. What was that? 8.03, was it? Or 8.07? 8.06? Oh. So a 2-year return on this would be 8.06 less 5.33 over 5.33. That'd be a 2-year return. And so if I were to do this mathematically, I would say, okay, that'd be a 2-year. 8.06 minus 5.33 equals divided by 5.33. So your 2-year return on this would be 51.22. Is that right? Damn, that's a good return over a 2-year holding period. Not bad. But, and we could divide that by 2 if you wanted, okay. The average of that would be about 25.61%. Yeah, go.
Is that supposed to be minus?
Yeah, what it is now, what you paid for it, minus what you paid for it, divided by what you paid for it. So in other words, my gain in dollars here was 8.06 minus 5.33. So my gain in dollars was $2.73 on an initial investment of $5.33. And that's the dollar amount per share. And then divided by what I paid to start this game, that would be my percent over the time. And if I divide that by 2, I get an average over that 2-year period of what? 1.22 divided by 2, 25.61. That's the average. One way you can figure an average. What I showed you today was another way to find an arithmetic average return. What I would do by that method would be I'd say, all right, let me find the exact 1 year. At exactly 1 year, $4.83. So, '13 to 2014, I would get, what was the initial? 5.33. Whoops, I'm sorry. What is it? 4.81 minus 5.33 divided by 5.33. And then from 2014 to 2015 would be where it is now, 8.06 minus 4.81 over 4.81. And that one would be 4.81 minus 5.33 divided by 5.33. So the first year you held it, you lost 9.76%. The second year of the 2-year holding period, you did 8.06 minus 4.81 divided by 4.81. And that's a whopping 67.57% on the second year of your 2-year hold. Now, if you do it that way and take the average, something interesting will happen. You get 9.76 plus 67.57 divided by 2. So your arithmetic average, the one that the book shows you, comes out to be, add those two up and divide by 2, 38.67%. That's the arithmetic average taking year by year for 2 years. Notice that that's not the same as the arithmetic average that I did the other way. There are a lot of different ways, and so when you're shown an arithmetic average, that doesn't mean that's the only way that arithmetic average could have been calculated. Oftentimes, when someone's trying to sell you an investment like stock, what they'll do is they'll choose the arithmetic average to give them the best number. So in this case, if I did it by that just 2 years straight up holding period divided by 2, I would get a lower number than if I did it by the arithmetic average the way the book is showing you. It might actually work out the other way. Finally, one last thing that I would point out here. One last thing that I might point out, just to finish this up, is the... Wow. Okay. 1 plus negative 9 point... 1 plus negative 0.0976 times 1 plus 0.6757 minus 1, and then we'll divide it out. 1 minus 0.9796. 0.0976. Whoops. 0.0976 equals times 1.6757 equals minus 1 divided by 2. Oh, and then 1/2, because we're two periods, you'll get 25.61%. That's not either of the other ones. That's a geometric way of doing it. So what am I trying to do, aside from confuse the hell out of you about what you're supposed to do? Just use the formulas that you're told to in the book and don't ask any questions. But if you want to know the best way to do it, best practices way, it's none of this crap. It's none of this. Now, I would do this in a simplistic, fast-paced environment. I would use one of them that I just showed you here. But if I were doing this in the quiet where I could do the numbers the right way and do the right formula, what I would have done is I would have actually taken 8.06, where I'm ending today, divided by the initial 4.81. Was that? No, it was 5.33 was the original buy. 5.33, and I'd raise that to the 1/2 power minus 1. That is the way you would do it as a professional. If I did it that way, 8.06 divided by 5.33, close the parenthesis, raise that to the 1/2 power, this, and then minus 1, my ass. 8.06 divided by 5.33 equals, raise that to the 0.5 power, minus 1 equals 22.97. That is the right way to do it. Taking compounding into account. You bought it 2 years ago. You held it and bailed this morning on it. Your annualized rate of return would be 22.97%. That is the right way. Again, that's not what the book shows. They show the arithmetic average and the geometric average. But this is the way you would do it as a finance pro. It's just to take the beginning divided by, the end divided by the beginning, raise it to the 1 over the number of holding years, and then minus 1. In this case, a 2-year hold on Rite Aid would buy you almost a 23% return right now. So what is the final upshot of this? I want you to tell me. You're now the investors. I want you to talk to me. Call Rite Aid. What should I do today? Should I cut bait and run? Should I hold? Should I go? Should I
hold?
Take the money and run? Actually, in my case, I'd probably just start barking like a scalded dog, sell that stuff out, and head for the hills. Because what's happened, in my judgment, is that was the honeymoon, and somehow a bunch of investors that are probably know what they're doing hauled ass out of that stock this morning. And what you're seeing left are the ones who are hoping that what's next to me when I woke up in the morning, it wasn't really Godzilla. It wasn't. But unfortunately, it looks to me as if there was a sell-off And that sell-off was pros getting out last night because they did what's called a sucker's run yesterday. A sucker's run is when there's news that normal people would think is a great idea. They lead a charge buying the stock. Everyone runs behind them to get the stock, and then they quietly get down and let everyone run by them, and then they dump. It's a sucker's run is what I see happening here. I might be wrong, but that's the profile I've seen before. Remember the old saying, if you are being chased by a lynching mob, you get in front of the mob and pretend you're leading a parade. And then as soon as you're out of sight, you duck into the bush and let them go by you, and then you run the other way. That's what I see happening there. Just a little bit of advice from an old financial analyst. That's all I have for you. Go home.